Hey, welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. On today's podcast, we are going to present for you here Dr. Sebastian Gorka, followed by Lara Trump, co-chair of the RNC. I want to play Dr. Gorka here because we touched with him on a bunch of things that we've talked about at greater length earlier in the show. And if you want to hear our fuller analysis, you can subscribe and listen to the whole podcast on SiriusXM Patriot. So we talked in the first hour of the show today about this Episcopalian priestess and her quoting misquoting Thomas Aquinas. So we'll talk about that with Dr. Gorka. That was in the first hour show. The second hour of the show, 7 o'clock, we talked all about abortion, but the politics of abortion. There's three separate categories. You have the morality of abortion. I love that conversation. The legality of abortion, fascinating, and the politics of abortion. And we tend to confuse all three and put them into one, and we get all mixed up and confused. We have to separate them. They're all important. They're all valid. But today we focus on the politics of abortion. And here's what the Democrats are saying. How should the Republicans respond? How should Donald Trump respond? Because Trump, in the next few days, as we talked to Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin yesterday, Trump's going to put out a statement on abortion. Okay, well, what should it say? What should the Republican and the Donald Trump stance be to try to neutralize the left's arguments? So we talked a lot about abortion, and there's a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans, who think we should run from the issue entirely. And Dr. Gorka has an opinion, too. Here he is.
Did I see the Gorka man? Yes, stand up, Gorka. Quick, get up. How good is he, Sebastian? Seb, they call him Seb. I call him Sebastian. Thank you, Sebastian. I just spotted you. It's lucky you're nice and tall.
The Gorka man. Dr. Gorka, I hope you had a very nice transgender day of visibility with the family this weekend.
Are you trying to... I haven't even started my work day yet, and you're just trying to piss me off. I survived Easter lunch with my mother-in-law, who is a massive Obama and Biden fan. So
oh, come on. Yes. Hold on. I mentioned this, that my mom and you never brought up that your mother-in-law is.
Yeah, you know, I'm revealing it now in front of the whole Breitbart crew.
Wow. How often does it come up?
It was shocking. It was absolutely shocking, especially since she knows that my wife, her daughter, her eldest, is running for the county chair for the RNC here in Fairfax County. And my dyed-in-the-wool, bluer-than-blue Democrat mother-in-law asked Katie how it's going.
Oh, wow. That's...
I know.
That's,
I know.
That's
and,
loving.
You know, people, we left the luncheon table with, you know, nobody was bleeding. It was impressive.
That's great. Yeah, no silverware thrown. That was always a good dinner in the Slater family, too. I think it was last week or the week before, we talked about how you love confrontation. So are you the one who brings anything up around the mother-in-law, or do you wait for her to strike first?
No, I have behaved myself. I'm not going to go into any more detail because I don't want to get in trouble with my wife.
Sure.
She is the one who has in the past brought stuff up. I'll never bring it up. I react and then it gets nasty. I have no need for, you know, getting in my mother-in-law's bad books. But sometimes I just can't help myself.
Choose your battles wisely is always good advice.
Yeah, right.
I want to get your take on this. This is a two-parter, Dr. Gorka.
Mm-hmm.
And
I want to know how you got Lara on. I've been trying to get Lara on for 3 weeks. It's easy to get President Trump on for a whole hour like I did a week ago than it is to get Lara. I know she's busy, but I'm impressed, Mike.
Yeah, but his daughter-in-law, when you get the big guy, I'll switch with you. I'll take Trump. You can have.
I'm going to see him tonight at Mar-a-Lago. So we're having an event for Tom Homan's new border security organization. So I'm going to tell him, you are an easier guest to get a hold of than your daughter-in-law.
I'll let you know how it goes with Lara. Got lots to talk about for sure. So we played this clip earlier. This clip made the rounds, I should say, of Cardinal Gregory calling Joe Biden a cafeteria Catholic. And for right reasons, I want to ask you about that because there's plenty to talk about there. But what didn't get attention, and we spent a good amount of time on in the first hour, was the Episcopalian priestess who was sitting right next to him.
You mean the clown who thinks that she's a priest?
Exactly. Thank you very much. I was...
Whenever I see a woman in a dog collar, I can't help myself. I like grin and smirk. It's like, have you actually read the Bible? Do you know who the apostles are? Stop making a clown out of yourself.
I feel weird saying the word priestess. I didn't emphasize it enough.
Like a shaman.
Let's play all this. It's 30 seconds. Here, so everyone talked about the cardinal, and no one talked about...
Before you play the card.
Yeah.
Give me your take on the cardinal, because a lot of people said, oh, look, he's bashing Biden. And there's another way to read that clip. It's like he's giving him an out, and he used the phrase cafeteria Catholic like a kind of jokey thing, not as a real criticism. What's your take, Mike?
And that's right. It's so funny. I didn't talk much about him. You're right. It's the most gentle... If it's a rebuke, it's the most gentle, soft-handed rebuke that one could possibly give to a man who would deserve a much larger rattling. But let the people decide.
I would say that he's very sincere about his faith.
Okay, so there's a good start to your point. Yeah. Is he?
Like a guy who's very sincere about his faith but loves Planned Parenthood. Yes,
I don't know if I would even start with that premise.
I would say that he's very sincere about his faith, but like a number of Catholics, he picks and chooses dimensions of the faith to highlight while ignoring or even contradicting other parts. There is a phrase that we have used in the past, a cafeteria Catholic. You choose that which is attractive and dismiss that which is challenging.
Okay, I'm going to stop there before we get to the Episcopalian gal. What do you make of that?
I think it's a real soft pedal. I really think it's a real soft pedal. I mean, let's be clear. This is a guy who, you know, he really should be excommunicated. I mean, if you're facilitating intrinsic evil, which is the theological determination of abortion, there is no abortion that is justified because of the taking of an innocent life. And if you've therefore facilitated by funding Planned Parenthood, which Biden has done, then he shouldn't forget, you know, getting, you know, communion on Sunday. The guy should be a public statement by the Holy See that, I'm sorry, you are not a Catholic as long as you support intrinsically evil actions.
He or she said something later that, well, there's a difference. You yourself can be a professing Catholic and hold different policy positions over here for the people you lead.
Well, look, this is the old canard, right? Of the, I'm a Catholic, but my public stance is different from my private stance. Well, no, that means you're a schizophrenic liar. Okay? I mean, these are a faith isn't a smorgasbord. It's not a menu item. Like, well, I believe the Pope on this. I don't believe the Pope on that. When Jesus said this, I'm not into that part, but I'm into this part. No, he's not a Catholic. I mean, your faith is not a private, is not split between what you think in private and what you do in public. Then you're just a hypocrite.
Yeah. Okay. So that's one thing. Here's the thing that people I don't think have talked a lot about. So here the Episcopalian gal jumps in.
Or as Thomas Aquinas would say, you allow your conscience to guide you.
Okay. Now, to be clear, Thomas Aquinas never said that, but you allow your conscience to guide you. What do you make of that? Why would she interject that made up sentence?
That's Kamala Harris at the Kavanaugh hearings talking to Blasey Ford and saying, I believe her truth. I believe your truth. That's just somebody pretending to be a religious person who is using the garb of her office to justify secular postmodernism. Right, and moral relativism. I mean, that's just garbage. That's just somebody who's a liberal postmodern relativist saying, you decide. It's up to you to decide.
It's unbelievable to bring Thomas Aquinas into that as your intellectual justification for that, when clearly he was speaking about a well-informed conscience in line with scripture for a purposeful end.
And the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit. It's not you deciding what's good. It's the Holy Spirit reminding you, hey, you've got a soul, and if you do the wrong thing, you're going to burn in hell forever, dude.
That's the gnashing of teeth. I was reading Matthew 13 this morning, and there's a lot of a lot about separation and a lot about if you're in the wrong pile, you will spend eternity gnashing your teeth. Oof.
When you die, you're not... Let's just be clear what her insane garbage logic means.
Yes, how dare we?
I'm a Christian. When you die, you're not going to be measured by the creator, the unmoved mover, based upon whether or not you comported with your own value system. That's not the judgment that's going to be, did Sebastian Gorka live up to what Sebastian Gorka said was good? That's what she's saying. It's garbage.
That's so great. And by the way, you probably don't even do that. So, like, no one does, even, like, their own ridiculously low standards. We don't even... that's so good. All right, so we talked about abortion in the last hour. And it's clear that the Democrats are making this their top issue. And we talked about how it's now in the Florida. They want to make a ballot initiative in all the swing states so that they can get out their base to Florida. And Trump wants to get in front of this, and he said he's going to make a statement about it coming up here soon. But the big question is, do you think that abortion is a political loser for the Republicans?
No. I'm kind of fed up with this. This statement that, don't, if you're at a public event, if you're running for office, I see this now with my wife's colleagues, as she's running for this county chair position, say, don't talk about abortion or what do we say about abortion? No, don't mention it. It's like, are you crazy? We're facing people, I mean, play the tape of Governor Northam, who think you can abort, quote-unquote, a baby after it's born. You don't run away from that. You say, hey, look at the other side. They're into infanticide. Forget about doing it in the womb. They want to have the option to kill it after it's born. Don't run away from it. After the greatest victory that I thought I'd never seen as a Catholic, that Roe v. Wade is known in my lifetime. After that victory, we run away. We are winning. I mean, look at the figures for kids. Kids are on our side. Oh, by the way, science is on our side when it comes to when life begins. And we want to, this is classic GOP, right? Never miss an opportunity to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. We are winning on an issue which will be the key metric for judging our civilization, meaning how we treat the most vulnerable. And the establishment wants to run away from an issue we're winning. Oh my gosh.
We broke the conversation into three different ones. You have the moral argument about abortion. You have the legal argument about abortion, like what can the states do versus the government, whatever. And then you have the political conversation. Like, what's the political stance that conservatives should take to win this moment? Because the calculus by many is that we should have had a red wave in 2022, but didn't, because Roe v. Wade was overturned 5 or 6 months earlier. So do you believe that that's could be true in 2024?
I don't have, there is no empirical data to that effect.
That's right. Yeah.
Absolutely not. There's a lot of empirical data for how Mitch McConnell gave Lisa Murkowski millions of dollars because she's a freaking rhino, you know, lapdog to him, and then pulled money from actual MAGA candidates across the country. You want to talk about empirical metrics? Talk about Mitch McConnell. Talk about Rona Romney McDaniel and their culpability. No, this is a talking point of the left. You know, you lost because you protected the babies. No, go to hell. Wrong. Absolutely wrong. The 2020 was a function of the swamp, of Rona, of Mitch, and of cowards. I mean, look at what we're witnessing right now. I mean, look at my... He was my intern as a young Marine officer. Look at Mike Gallagher. I mean, an absolute disgrace and insult to the uniform he once wore, who resigns one day before the deadline so that he can't be replaced before the November election. That's who we're fighting. Those are the people who would have you believe, oh, don't talk about abortion. Run away, run away. We are seeing the extinction of the rhino class from Mitch to Mike, and we need to run towards the gunfire right now, not away from the gunfire.
That's so good. And if we run away from it, they fill the void with whatever they want to fill it with.
Yes.
So obviously,
yeah, the establishment fills the void. The establishment who gets as much money when they lose as when they win. I mean, that's the GOP establishment. They get the same amount of money if they lose the election than if they win the election.
Did you see the clip the other day of King of the Atheists, Richard Dawkins?
I did not. What is that more?
Oh, wow. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. He said that I don't have it in front of me here. I could pull it up maybe. He said, I'm a cultural Christian, and I prefer to live in a culturally Christian nation than any other. Why do you chuckle?
Because every time I think of that man, I go back to Ben Stein's incredible documentary, yeah. Expelled. Have you seen that?
Yeah. It was definitely his worst moment, but also like the most real moment of him.
Totally.
He would say it's his worst moment. The
imbecility of modern atheism.
Yeah, that's right.
Now we have Dawkins, who's meant to be the greatest brain of the four atheist horsemen of the apocalypse, along with that cretin Sam Harris, who actually said on camera twice, "I don't care if Hunter Biden was killing children in his basement." Censoring the Hunter Biden laptop story was a, quote, justified conspiracy. I mean, these are the people who are held up as icons of leftist intellectualism. And if your listeners haven't seen it, Ben Stein's movie, the documentary Expelled, which was like over a decade old, in which he chronicles back then the political correctness of what you are not allowed to say in high schools, in colleges, especially when it comes to questioning things like evolution or talking about religion. And the last scene in the movie, I don't know how he got it on camera, he just constantly pushes Dawkins on the origins of life. Okay, evolution, okay. But where does the life come from? How does it start? Because science has no answer for the unmoved mover. Science has zero answer except for the cop-out, the multiverse garbage. So where does it come from? And he pushes so delicately on Dawkins that Dawkins actually says, so where does it come from, Professor? And he finally says, well, I probably seeded by aliens from another planet. So believing in God and 2,000 years worth of Christian teaching, that's wacky, right? But aliens, the sperm of aliens seeded the earth. That's science. I mean, that's who Dawkins is. That's when the greatest intellects of the left are in cretins.
Here it is. I got it. And you characterize it perfectly.
Legitimate pursuit?
And that designer could well be a higher intelligence from elsewhere in the universe. Higher intelligence would itself have had to have come about by some explicable or ultimately explicable process. It couldn't have just jumped into existence spontaneously. That's the point.
So Professor Dawkins was...
Right, there you go. So yeah, it came from a different universe. All right, well, here, this is worth playing. Let's play like just a minute of it. You'll get the gist.
Well, I must say I was slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not a believer. But there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense. It's true that statistically the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we substituted any alternative religion. That would be truly dreadful.
Goes on. What do you make? What do you think of that?
Beautiful. His own words, he's a moron. I mean, why is there value in the thing, but it's not truth? And he just said that. I'm a cultural Christian, but I'm happy that there are less Christians. Well, you're a moron then.
Yeah.
Why is there? What is the value of that cathedral? Why do you like that hymn? Are you just an Episcopalian who thinks Sunday is a social club in a weird-looking building. He just can't. He can't go that final step and say, "Well, it's because that cathedral and that music are both reflections of an objective truth that exists outside of me and which defines beauty and which is the good." That's what he is incapable. He cannot explain why that hymn warms his soul. He cannot explain why Chartres speaks to the eternal. Why can't he do that? Because his ego is just too big. He has learned nothing. One of the quote-unquote greatest minds of modern history is an idiot. And that clip tells you it empirically.
Ah, fantastic. Yeah, to him it's just, I guess, a chemical reaction in his brain or something that, that doesn't happen.
It's something that makes him feel good.
Yeah.
He can't. I mean, seriously, a scientist, if he is a scientist, would say, hang on a second. Why does that make me feel good? And then they stop and they realize that there is this liminal edge, there is this border you cannot cross in science, where science is completely incapable of even explaining the word good.
Mm-hmm.
What is good? There is no physics, there's no biology, there's no chemistry, there's no field of science that can define just the word good. But he feels it. But he has to deny what the good is a reflection of and where it comes from. That clip, stunning. That is a self-indictment from Rousseau on down of the whole postmodern relativist house of cards.
Where can we get more Dr. Gorka?
Everywhere except the fascists on YouTube. So Seb Gorka, Sebastian Gorka on all the usual places, Truth Social, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Parler, Getter. Check me out on Rumble. The website is sebgorka.com to listen to the show. And for unique content by me and access to me, it's my article page, the Substack, Sebastian Gorka, one word, sebastiangorka.substack.com.
And I'm going to clip what you just said right there, put it on all the socials as well, so we can spread that love as well. Dr. Gorka, great to talk to you, sir. Appreciate you.
God bless. Thank you, guys.
As always, fantastic. Listen, we got 214 days to win this darn thing. So we're going to talk to the RNC a lot because we got to figure out how we're going to do this. And I want to make sure they're doing their part. We'll do our part. I want to make sure they're doing their part. Here's Laura Trump. Laura, congratulations on the new job. How are you?
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm great. I'm excited and honored to take on this role. And as people have probably seen, we got to work very quickly. We had a lot to do. Still a lot to come, but we're working hard for everybody to make sure we win this election.
Yeah, we got 214 days to do it. Just one background personal question. At what point did you think, I want this job? I think I do good, and I think I want to take it over because it sounds terrible to me.
Yeah, so. I mean, if I'm being really honest, did I ever think that this would be a role I would take on? Probably not. But you know, I'm a person, as I think you could say about everybody in the Trump family, who I want to be the most useful, and I want to do whatever I can to be effective. And when this position became a possibility for me. And I really talked a lot with my father-in-law about this. He was the one who really told me, he said, I think you would be perfect for this role. I think this is where we need you. I think the party needs you here, and I think the country needs you here. And so I said, you know what? This is something that that I want to take on. And yeah, so hopefully everybody can see that it's something I'm taking very seriously and truly am honored to do. I never thought I would be able to call myself the co-chair of the RNC.
No, we're glad you're there. We talked to Mike Watley the other day, and we're praying for you guys, certainly. So, but I got to be honest, this audience over the years, after being beaten down and disappointed for a long time, pretty skeptical. I think like an understandable and healthy cynicism and skepticism of the Republican Party. And I don't think we want to be that way anymore. So what's different now than in the past?
Well, yes, we should always examine everything presented, especially these days, with a skeptical eye, no matter what it is. But listen, I understand the hesitation a lot of people had over the past several years with really getting super involved or relying on or donating to the RNC. The truth is, I think a lot of people felt like maybe the folks there weren't fully representing exactly what our values are as conservatives and using money wisely towards causes that we care about. And so I think people saw pretty quickly. The first week that we were there, we did a lot of staffing changes. I think I'll say very nicely, we changed a lot in terms of the folks at the RNC. We made sure that we weren't overlapping people with the campaign. And what's very unique about this election cycle right now, and I can say this, Mike, having gone through two previous elections, I don't feel old enough to have gone through one, but alas, this is my third. I can't even believe it. We previously never saw a cohesive bond between the campaign and the RNC. We always worked together and they worked alongside the campaign, but never were we one entity. And we truly can say right now, the RNC and the campaign is one bonded entity. We have people currently at the RNC who were over at the Trump campaign as of a month ago, and vice versa, folks from the RNC who have gone over to the campaign. This way, we're not doubling up on the same effort. This way, one person is in charge of one thing, not two people doing the same job, and we're wasting money on that. We've reviewed vendors and contracts that have been at the RNC for years, making sure that everything is priced appropriately, that we're getting the best value for everyone's dollar. It is a very different vibe at the RNC right now. And I think the point is we are all facing the same direction and we are all focused on one end goal. That is making sure we save this country come November 5th. We're playing the game differently as we head into this election cycle. We're doing things that have never been done at the RNC before, things like legal ballot harvesting, trained poll watchers, making sure people are getting out to vote early and trusting vote by mail. We want you to vote however it is you can vote as early as you can and then encourage other people to go do the same thing. So from the messaging to the staffing to the use of funds, I think people are very quickly going to see it is a different RNC.
That's great. John Whitlaw, Trump co-chair of the RNC. So Biden has a ton of money, raised $26 million in one night the other day, while, of course, your father-in-law was at the wake of the NYPD officer. But $26 million is a pretty good haul. You guys, RNC, didn't have a lot of money. I see some numbers here, and you obviously know more than me. So maybe where is the Republican Party right now? But more importantly, what is this money going to be spent on differently now? Because as we've been saying, 214 days. We got 240 days to win this darn thing. So what are we going to do? How are we winning it?
Yeah. 31 weeks as of this past Tuesday away from the most important election, I believe, of any of our lifetimes, for sure. Yeah, so when we came into these positions, Michael Whatley, the chairman, and I, we really didn't have a great situation with the cash, obviously. And the Democrats love to talk about that. As you just referenced, it took three presidents, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and God bless us all, the current president of the United States, as hard as it is to say, Joe Biden, to raise $26 million at the glitzy Radio City event last week. It is taking us one president, Donald Trump, as of this Saturday, in one single event. This is our first major fundraising event with our joint fundraising committee, Trump 47 committee. This is a fundraising committee between the RNC and the campaign. We have $40 million that we've already raised for that single event. As of yesterday, we reported our March fundraising numbers. $65.6 million we have brought in just in the month of March. It is the largest fundraising month for the RNC in history.
Oh, wow.
We are taking this very seriously. And Mike, what I think it says is that people are starting to see this is a different RNC. We feel more comfortable now donating our money here because we believe that the money will go towards the things that we care about. And you ask, how is that money going to be used? Well, I just talked about the fact that we are going to be playing this game differently, right? We need to have people all across this country. We want volunteers, first of all. Of course, if you want to volunteer, DonaldJTrump.com, GOP.com, please come help us wherever you are in the country because we want you poll watching. We want people in every tabulation center across America. If you're an attorney, we want you also in every polling location and in every tabulation center because this way, if there is even the faintest hint of anything wrong, in a moment, we can tackle it and we can address it. And we're not waiting weeks on end to bring lawsuits in this space. We're making sure that we have a robust team across this country actually focused on winning. And not only is it about getting out the vote, engaging with things, people like low propensity voters. These are people who always vote Republican, but maybe only go to, you know, a polling location or vote in every three or four elections. We got to get them out this election cycle. But then on top of that, once we get out the vote, and I believe we will, I believe Donald Trump will overwhelmingly have more votes than Joe Biden in this election. We then have to protect that vote. Election integrity is the number one thing we are focused on at the RNC right now, because let's face it, if people do not believe we have free, fair, and transparent elections, we cannot say we are the United States of America. So we have a whole host of ways we are ensuring that indeed this is a fair election. We have 24 lawsuits out right now. I'm sorry, 24 states with 81 lawsuits out right now across the country. These are designed to make it harder to cheat and easier to vote. We are putting in place these not only poll watchers, but poll workers. These are trained people who can actually physically handle the ballots, count how many are coming in, count how many are going out. We have layer upon layer of ways that we are working to ensure that we get people out to vote and that vote is protected as we head towards November 5th. And the idea, Mike, is that we want to have so many people voting early for Donald Trump that we swamp the system, that they cannot play catch up with us as we head towards Election Day, because we know oftentimes conservatives like to wait until Election Day to vote. And we want to make sure that we get people in as early as we can, because you never know what happens in life, whether your personal circumstances. Look at centers like in Arizona that they had an entire facility who had issues with the machines and they had to close it down on Election Day. Mm. We can't wait till Election Day. We have to play this game differently. We have to get people to vote early. We have to ballot harvest where it's legal, and we have to protect that vote once it comes in.
Yeah, my conservative instinct is to vote on Election Day out of tradition, but I've decided to give that up this year. When I heard that once the party knows I voted, they will stop wasting money on sending me texts and mailers to reminding me to go vote. So I'm saving the party money by voting early, and that's enough for me. All that matters, you know, is, excuse me, like Wayne County. Like, we can do everything in Michigan, but if they cheat in Wayne County, it doesn't matter. Like, it's over. So, like,
right.
So are you guys, like, focused on the particular counties to make sure there's no funny business?
Absolutely. There are 19 counties in this country that we have to focus on and that are must-win counties for Donald Trump in order to ensure victory on November 5th. So we are highly focused on, of course, the whole country is important. And we want you, no matter where you are, no matter how red your state or county might be, to get out and vote. Because, again, we want to swamp the system. We want to overwhelm the Democrats. But you're exactly right. There are 19 counties that it will come down to that we have to hyper focus on, where we will be deploying thousands and thousands of volunteers, people from not just within that county, not just within that state, but across the country. We want you to come help. Again, DonaldJTrump.com, GOP.com. Please volunteer with us. This is the most important election, and it will come down to those counties. I think the good news is the Democrats know that we are paying attention this time. They certainly caught us off guard in 2020. They know we're paying attention right now. And what I will also say out there, just as a warning shot, it's not worth it to cheat. If we find out that you cheat in an election, we will prosecute you to the full extent of the law. Don't let them tell you on the other side that it's worth it for a second to do anything that is nefarious, anything that is wrong. It isn't worth it to do it. Do not cheat, because we'll catch you and we will make sure that you are prosecuted if it happens. So you're right. We have to buckle down. We're focused on those 19 counties. We're focused on the swing states. But I think that the vibe right now in this country is very different than anything we've seen. I heard when I was coming on, you were talking about the leaps that Donald Trump has made with certain voting blocks. And these are voting blocks that are very important to the Democrats. You talk about, you know, Black Americans. He got 8% of the vote in 2020. Right now, Donald Trump is polling at 23%.
Jeez.
Look at Hispanic Americans. He is up right now 6 points on Joe Biden in some polling. With Hispanic Americans, you look at the youth vote. This is a block that they think they just have locked down, with whether because of Hollywood, the music industry, who's always in the bag for the Democrats. Right now, Donald Trump, if the election were held today, would win voters 18 to 34 years old. They have a huge problem on the other side, because we have a unique opportunity, Mike, to contrast two presidents in their presidencies. We know what Donald Trump will do as president. We know how he acted as president. there was no threat of World War III because it was peace through strength. We had peace agreements in the Middle East. We had talks with Kim Jong-un to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. He kept his promises on securing the southern border, on trade agreements, not just with Canada and Mexico, but with China as well. He made sure we had real low unemployment numbers in this country, that people were back to work, that companies were opening back up in America. We were buying American. We were hiring American. We were energy independent and almost a net energy exporter when he left office. We know what it's like with him in office. And right now we feel how terrible it is with Joe Biden in office. People are smart. They know how to compare these two things. So all we have to do is make sure we get all these people out to vote, because they will vote for Donald Trump, and protect that vote once it comes in.
My last question for you, Laura Trump, co-chair of the RNC. There's illegal voting, right? There's like breaking the law that you spoke of, prosecuting the full extent of the law. And then there's illegal voting. You know what I mean? Right. So like in Wisconsin, it was, well, if you're indefinitely confined to your house, you don't need to show an ID, you know, that kind of thing. So the End Wokeness account, and I can't verify these numbers, but they say since the start of 2024, Texas, Pennsylvania, Arizona, a bunch of other states have had a ton of illegals being able to register to vote because they get like some sort of illegals voting. What do we do about that? And you know, in California, you can get a driver's license if you're an illegal immigrant, and you can automatically be registered to vote and stuff like that. Like, are we on the ground making sure that stuff can't happen?
Yeah, well, I'll say it. That certainly is an uphill battle. And there's no doubt that the reason that Joe Biden has let millions of illegal immigrants in this country, people who broke our law to come here, is because he knows he is losing in all these spaces where traditionally Democrats win. They've got to bring in new voters. How do you do that? You make sure people can't use IDs whenever they go vote. Not only are we paying attention to it, but I had Scott Pressler last week, who a lot of people know very well as a grassroots hero. This is a guy who has single-handedly registered more Republican voters than I think any person in history.
Yeah.
We are working alongside his team to specifically address things like this. Yes, we're paying attention to it. And yes, we can, Mike, get back to one day of voting, voter ID, paper ballots. But in order to do that, we've got to win this election at the top with Donald Trump. We've got to expand our lead in the House, and we have to take back the Senate. Okay. That's the plan. Once we get there, let's change it to make it secure and safe, and every single American, Republican, Democrat, or independent should want just that.
Our audience are not just voters. Our audience isn't just bringing 10 people to the polls. Our audience need to be the poll watchers and the people there on the ground. So how can our audience help the cause?
Yes, we want you. Please come volunteer. DonaldJTrump.com. There's a tab at the top. You can get involved there. GOP.com, same thing. Please come volunteer with us. Nothing is more important than this election. It's not about us right now. It's about my kids. It's about your kids. It's about our grandkids one day and the future of this country. There is no doubt. If Donald Trump does not win this election, if Republicans are not successful this round and Democrats are allowed to use communist tactics against their political opponents, we will never be the same country again. It is critical to win. Please come help us. We want you on the team. Thank you so, so much.
Laura, appreciate you. Hope we can talk again. Keep up the wonderful work.
Will do. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day. There you go. Laura running the show. I'm glad about it. I'm American made. I got American parts. So we talked the last couple days about some great things happening out of Nebraska. And also Wisconsin with Zuckerbucks. They voted to ban Zuckerbucks in Wisconsin from ever being ever happening again. $400 million was spent by Mark Zuckerberg's team in the 2020 election in Wisconsin. So what are Zuckerbucks? And what does this ballot measure prove? And are Zuckerbucks being spent in other states now? Like, what's happening exactly? We're going to talk to the chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party, obviously, who led this effort to ban Zuckerbucks tomorrow at 8:30.